Hi everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and I'm really excited to talk to David Colpack today. Now, David is the head of school at Trinity College, the North Campus, and he's also one of the early adopters of wellbeing in schools. Now, back in 2012, he was a part of the residency program brought by the University of Pennsylvania, led by Professor Martin Seligman, he was at St. Peter's Boys' School here in Adelaide. And he's pretty much been involved in the whole POSED movement in schools since day one. And I really wanted to get him on today to share his insights, particularly around how to set up a whole school approach. Now, David came into Trinity back in, well, about 5 years ago. So he's into his fifth year. And I was keen to ask him about how you go from a school, coming into a new school, to try to implement a wellbeing program across the school. And David gives us some really important insights, particularly around understanding that there's not a one-size-fits-all. So he talks about doing an audit, and we dive into that. Also, he also talks about the teacher wellbeing side of things. He gives us some strategies about finding out what's important to teachers, not only in their teaching life, but also in their life outside of teaching on a more personal level. He also gives some great insights into some challenges that he's found and I guess how to overcome those challenges. He gives a really good example about the consistent language, and he gives some really overall great insights and tips of implementing the wellbeing programs across the school. So highly recommend you tune in. Also, at the end of the episode, we talk about some iBooks David has written, and we put them in the show notes as well. So without further ado, I'm really excited to introduce to you David Colpack. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I really appreciate your time, mate. I just want to kick off with a question. Now, you've been an educator for a few decades now.
Yeah, thanks.
And you were one of the early adopters, not for the school that you were at, and that was St. Peter's Boys originally, where you came across positive education and I guess wellbeing as well in a school. And that was back in about 2012.
Yes.
So what was your first introduction to that? Because you, as I said, you're one of the early adopters. And how did you come across wellbeing or / positive education in schools back then?
Yeah. So we were really fortunate back at Saints in those early days where we had the University of Pennsylvania come out and train 100 of us in just the schools of resilience. So we had, I think from memory, it was 6 days over a school holidays. We gave up time to come on in and be trained. And it was one of those things that, you know, you're giving up school holidays and you know, this is precious rejuvenation time. And you go to day one and you start listening and going, oh yeah, this makes sense. And day two, it's making a bit more sense. And you're still thinking, where are we going to learn? How are we going to teach this? And then day three comes along and you're thinking, this is great, but I still don't know how I'm going to teach this. And then you start to realize by about day four that it has nothing to do with teaching. It's all about you, your well-being, and how if you're not right for yourself, you're not going to be right for anyone else. And so that was, I guess, the early stages of knowing, you know, what we would call now teacher well-being or educator well-being, going back to those early days where it was getting things right for yourself to be right for everybody else. And that was great. So that was almost the first sign, you know, my belief before then was someone was either resilient or you weren't. You know, it wasn't something like a muscle that you can work on and develop. It was you either had it or you didn't. But then unpacking the science behind the skills of resiliency showed us that very easily that we could work on getting to know kids who they are, finding ways to tap into who they are, their strengths around starting from their point to become more resilient, or at least developing tools that they can call on, knowing that not all tools are going to be successful. So that was that initial stage where you know, my role back then was student behavior management, and we'd always talked about, is behavior something that needs to be managed, or is it something that we work with? And so even just changing my title from behavior management to student well-being in those early days just reframed a little shift in focus as to what the purpose of that role even was. So starting with Penn Resilience, we had Mark Seligman in Adelaide as the thinker in residence. And so St. Peter's tied in with him. So it was amazing opportunities just to have this resource, you know, on our doorstep, knowing that we were trialing different things, knowing that we were tweaking our current practices, and we weren't changing everything. We were just reframing the language that we used to move away from it, you know, perhaps any kind of deficit language to being more, I'll use the word carefully, but positive in terms of how we delivered our well-being to the students. So the early days were fun. They were, I guess there was always a little bit of caution because we weren't sure, were we making mistakes? You know, were things like this really tried and true? And, you know, you would have teachers say, you know, social emotional learning's been around for years, and, you know, we've always done, we've always had programs for this. And I think for us, it had to be moving away from a program as such and more around a practice that became, you know, where our starting point was.
Yeah, interesting. And it's interesting here to talk about that, the whole resilience thing. You either, I don't know, handle things well or you don't. And that's exactly the same way I always thought about that resilience thing as well. But I guess once you actually, I guess, dive into the whole pos ed or well-being thing a bit deeper, you can actually practice to be a more resilient person. And it's like learning a skill in a sport, isn't it? Like you go to training, you learn the skill of kicking in football, whatever it might be, so you can execute it in the game. It's the same thing with like the resiliency thing. Like you're learning, you're practicing some skills. So if you are having a bad day or going through a rough time, you've got those skills to call on to implement when you most need them.
Absolutely. Even if it's just you're understanding your own thinking patterns. Why do I think like this? Mm. You know, am I someone who internalizes and blames myself for everything? Am I someone who blames other people for everything? How, you know, what's my style of thinking, and how does that shape, I guess, my buoyancy? When am I, you know, what do I need to maintain my level of buoyancy so I can be resilient, or when do I let things drag me down? But I guess for me, those early days really were great in affirming that bad times are going to happen and that's okay. Mm, you know, yeah, the whole movement around, you know, we always have to be happy. I still struggle with it. I'm not a lover of the word happy, because I think what is happiness? It's elusive. It's fleeting. It's, you know, it's not always present. And for me, it comes down to what do I need to do to be, to cope and to be the best person I can be right now. And sometimes the best person I can be right now might be someone who's a little bit low and is needing, you know, needing to process and needing to work through those bad times, and that's okay.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. And it's interesting you also pointed out back then when you did the University of Pennsylvania training, it was about you as a teacher, your teacher well-being. So you need to be, I guess, well to teach the students. And then it sort of shifted to the student well-being, and in the last like year or so, it's probably come back around again to the teacher well-being. Is that a trend that you've seen as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the first things that we learned was that well-being isn't something that can be done to you or for you, that you actually are in control and you have to take charge of your own well-being. So in schools now, I guess, you know, all around us is media propaganda around what we need for our well-being, and almost delivering a message that well-being is something that others can do for you. But I think, you know, for me in a school environment, teacher well-being or educator well-being or anyone that works in the school is confronted by issues that are going to challenge their well-being. Mm. So it comes back to how do I take control of my well-being? Mm. You know, and I talk to the staff all the time. I could put a fruit bowl in the staff room. I could give ice creams at lunchtime. And these are just, these are tokens.
Yeah.
You know, that they might make you, there's that word, they might make you happy for the 5 seconds that you're eating it, but it actually doesn't change your thinking. It doesn't shape your practices of how you develop and how you focus on your well-being. So, I think teacher well-being is equally as important because, again, if we're not right, we go into a class with so many other humans that we have interactions with that if we're not right, we can do more damage.
Mm. Oh, 100%. And you know the great Robert Hoff.
Yes.
So Hoffy, OAM now, he was the principal that I had when I was teaching at Emmanuel. I remember him saying to me one day, he said, teachers know what they're after teaching for a little bit. I mean, you do your prac teaching as a teacher, you get in there, you try or you do the training, then you might get your first contract. And after a while, you do know what you're getting yourself in for. And he said, teachers do not know what they're getting themselves in for. So we need to be responsible as individuals to having those strategies that do improve our well-being, or if something goes wrong or you're not at your best or whatever it might be, even if it's something to do with out of school, because that's another issue, bringing things that are happening in our personal life to school as well, as well as those things that happen at school. And he said, it's up to us to work out what works for us. And that's what I think you're pretty much saying there as well for educators.
Yep, absolutely. I think the danger when we, and I think even the word well-being is probably becoming an overused word as well. Yeah. Everything is good for our well-being.
Yeah,
but well-being really isn't a one-size-fits-all. Mm. And you know, a lot of the discussion, you know, we've had have been around context and how things work for you and what works for me here at Trinity are things that may not have worked for me when I was at Saints and vice versa, because our context is different, staff are different. And if we talk about a one size not fitting all for our students, we actually have to make sure that we adopt the same philosophy for the staff. It's not a one size fits all. And you know, the discussion around equity and equality and how do we get people to the same place may look different.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's a good way into this next question. So you went from, you were at St. Peter's Saints for how long?
21 years.
21 years. And then you moved to Trinity College, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah, my fifth year now.
Fifth year. So you've gone from that Saints to Trinity College. Now you're head of the North Campus at Trinity College. So when you arrived there, obviously coming from that POSED background that you do have, big on character strengths, what was the first thing you did, or maybe you could talk to what, or give some advice, or pretty much what you did when you got to the new school about implementing a wellbeing or POSED approach across the whole school?
Yeah, absolutely. Big question, because coming to Trinity, they had already a PERMA model in place. So when Martin Seligman was in Adelaide, Trinity was part of that. And so he'd been here and spoken to the staff. There's some work that some of the teachers had done with Geelong Grammar. So there was already a connection. So for me, what I had to do really carefully was find out what the staff knew, what the staff liked, and in essence, what the staff valued, because our value systems are what underpin or underlie where we want to take things, or where we see ourselves either as a human in the work environment or the school itself. So what were the values of the school? So the first thing I remember doing was an activity with the teachers about, what does it mean to you to be a teacher? What are the things that you really value? What are the things that you hope to gain? And what are the things that you hope to, you know, what sort of mark do you want to make on students when you leave? And that was just for me to start getting some information about where headsets were at.
Mm.
And that was great, because that gave me a lot. And it really showed that the staff were already having a baseline of well-being being important in the development of the students.
Can I stop you there? How did you actually do that? Was that through a survey?
As a staff meeting. So my very first day here, you know, I it was one of the, you know, week zero PD days, and I did the usual introduction to this is who I am, this is my background, this is what I hope to bring.
Yep.
And then threw it over to them. So now you know about me, this is how I'm going to get to know about you. And so there was some roundtable discussions, there was some work done individually, but it was probably about, you know, over an hour and a half, 2 hours. I got the staff to really, well, as deeply as you can in a 2 hour period, but dive into their purpose for being here ultimately. And so it was a good way. And it was paper, pens, and then a lot of reading just to say, right, this is giving me an idea.
Yeah.
It also then became the starting point, because what I did was then meet with every one of the staff individually. So I had what they'd written. I had a bit of understanding about them. And then married that with a face-to-face conversation. So ultimately, my first term, he was really just getting to know the staff on that individual level as a professional, but also as a person, because what they gave me had probably more to the human side of them rather than the professional side. And if we know how the human operates, we can then tap into how the professional works as well. So I think that was my first point. And really from there, it started off conducting an audit through, and that would have been an audit initially around staff, but we looked at what was in place. POSED was already a lesson here that was undertaken. We had snippets of You Are Strong and Zones of Regulation. So there were some things already happening, but I wanted to see how we brought it all together under a framework as such. So again, our context, there are, you know, there are six Trinity schools. Every one of our contexts is slightly different. So it wasn't going to be something that I was thinking this is going to work well at North, therefore it's going to work well at every one of the other Trinity schools. I was purely basing it around what were our needs, and what were the needs of the staff. So we started really slowly just with character strengths. That was the one area that I thought was a simple thing. That was our low-hanging fruit that we can look at. Who are we when we're our best selves? And we started that with the staff. And then we looked at how we unpack that in classrooms and through the curriculum. What does that look like in practice for you to work with your students? And so that then started the evolution of the audit for students. So if this is what our students are talking about, we listen through our pastoral care team, conversations that we're having. We do the WEC, the Wellbeing Engagement Collection Survey. So that gave us good data around what our students were saying about they were missing or they were needing in their wellbeing. And then once we'd done that survey the first time, we sat as a staff and analyzed the data to say, if this is what the students are saying, what are we doing that's hitting the mark and what are we doing that's missing the mark? Mm-hmm. So we tried to marry what was in place with the responses the students gave. Because if there are things in place and the students are saying, well, it's actually got no traction, it's not got no connection, then either there's no point in doing it or we have to rethink how we're doing it. So it was taking the data and the evidence around what students were saying with what we were trying to get through, and then use that as our evolution of what we were implementing.
Yeah.
Can I ask
again, did you do that at staff meeting, like a round table in year level? Yep. Top.
Yeah.
Thing?
Yeah. Absolutely. Lots of staff conversation, staff discussion. That would have probably been around the September. So we would have already had three terms of me being here. You know, because again, it's not the sort of thing I was just going to come in and go holers bowlers from the start. I knew what I thought would work.
Yeah.
That my opinion and my ideas certainly changed over those three terms.
Yep.
Because again, as you said, you know, I came with a St. Peter's experience that wasn't going to contextually work well for me here. So it was then, once we started putting things together, that I could see that the visible wellbeing, Lee Waters framework, was going to give us what we needed, because it wasn't prescriptive. It gave us an idea of a framework around processes and practices, but it allowed us to bring in growing with gratitude, or you are strong, or zones of regulation, or bounce back, or smiling mind, or anything that worked well within a search framework. that adopted practices to develop our strengths and our emotional management, attention awareness, relationships, coping, and habits and goals, which is what Visible Wellbeing sees as the elements to build a flourishing life. So for me, again, I come back to what I said before, there's not a one size fits all, and having a range of pulling the best to suit the students at the time as well. Because what we do this year with our students in year four, for example, may not be what we're going to do next year.
Yep.
But we have the framework that we work within, and how we do that or what we bring into it has to be agile, has to be flexible, and has to be able to meet the students. And again, the teacher delivery it, if it's not authentic for them, yeah, the kids are going to see through that too. So they've got to have a connection to it.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot to it, isn't there? Like it sounds easy in theory, but there is a lot of moving parts to it. And like you mentioned, you don't have to do all this stuff overnight. Like you come in, you got to know the staff first, that was on day one, then slowly student surveys, then by September of the first year, had some data to work out, okay, where we're going to go next. And then you go into fourth term, and then probably things start to look or take shape in the second year kind of thing.
Absolutely. So
it doesn't have to be overnight that you are doing these things. It can just be slowly, small steps, I guess, with a plan, but just taking small steps over time. And I guess with those, when you started at Trinity, what are some of those challenges that came up? Was there any, though, you mentioned about you sort of changed your approach at some sort of, what you had in mind did change over time, maybe not everything, but a few things did. So what are some of those challenges that did come up, and how did you deal with them or overcome them more?
Yeah, I think there are always challenges. Like I would still say that we have challenges now. If you don't have challenges, you're not actually going to grow, are you? You're not going to continue to evolve. For me, the biggest challenge initially was consistency of language, because we know language is crucial to any of the initiatives or any of the, I'll use the word carefully, programs that we want to implement. Because if there's not consistency of understanding or consistency of delivery, then we just confuse each other and we confuse our students, because we go from teacher to teacher and they're using particular language to have a different meaning. And that's confusing.
Mate, can I just ask you something like on that confusing language? I confuse myself sometimes because I pretty much swap well-being with positive education. And I kind of think, in a way, they're similar. But what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so...
are they similar or different?
I see them as different. For me, the positive education is the teaching of principles of positive psychology.
Yep.
So I see... And depending again on how it's done at each school. So positive education for me here at Trinity is similar to what it was at St. Peter's, where it's actually a subject.
Mm.
Now, well-being goes beyond just being a subject.
Yep.
So we teach principles of positive psychology through our positive education programs.
Yep.
But we should embrace all principles of well-being from the moment a child enters our schoolyard at the end of the day. And it's hard because, again, so if we come back to that, they were some of the things that we talked about. What is positive psychology? Yep. What is positive education? And what is well-being? And when are they interchangeable? When are they? When do they overlap? When do we see them? And again, it was very much positive education became the explicit teaching of what we wanted to be implicitly woven through.
Mm.
So, I going back to the resilience training, that taught me skills, and that was actual teaching. It was how I then embedded it and practiced those skills that became the stuff that was woven into the fabric of my life. So we teach through well-being / pos ed lessons, but we expect that the practices of all of our teachers bring all of those, the science-y type things to life through how we interact and how we engage.
No, so that's a great explanation, because I think it was just out of habit, like from starting Growing with Gratitude 10 or so years ago now, I just found myself interchanging the words without even thinking about it. And I knew they were sort of different, but I've just gotten this habit of doing it.
Yeah.
But the way you explain it then is really good. So you had that challenge of the language, the common language. How did that come about to, I guess, get everyone on the same page?
Yeah, look, I have this activity that I do. I've been doing it for years, which is quite ridiculous. And it's just taking the word picnic, and I do this. So if you've been to a PD with me, you would have seen this done. I take the word picnic and I get everyone to write down the top 10 things that they think of when they hear the word picnic. And then we compare them. And most times nobody gets more than 5 or 6 words in common. So I say, if we take something as simple as picnic that we all have connection and understanding to, but if I'm comparing with someone else, we're only 50% on the same page with our understanding or our vision around what picnic is. Imagine when we throw words in like respect or resilience or coping or bravery or any one of the strengths. So if we're not unified in our understanding, we start to have a different image of what this is. And so that is always just a simple way to identify the value in having common understanding. Mm. So it was, and I come back to the strengths. The strengths was the easy place to start because that drew us all together to say, these are our definitions of the 24 strengths. These are our definitions of the virtues. And this is our starting point for bringing language together. You are strong was a great way when we're looking at friendship to develop our, you know, understanding of the friendship facts. That showed us what relationships were like, you know, looking at gratitude, all of the concepts that we've done, we've drawn on all of you as the experts in what you've delivered to be able to say, this is how we're going to, I guess, in essence, define what gratitude is or what service is or any of them. I'll go back to friendship, what relationships are, so that we know what we all mean when we're talking about them. Because if bravery, and I look at a strength, if bravery means something for me in PE but means something very different when I go to science, how is that being fair to understanding what bravery is, and even getting an understanding that bravery isn't the absence of fear, you know, having a real deeper understanding that it's not just what this word means, it's what this word doesn't mean. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when you talk about, just a few memories came back to mind then, when you talk about bravery and science at high school. I know things have changed a lot, but it's pretty brave when you used to put the whatever it was, the chemical on the back bench, to light it up in the
Absolutely.
I didn't do it, but
you're a good boy.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, but mate, just with the, I guess, moving on to the key benefits. So you've been at Saints, which is probably one of the first schools to adopt the wellbeing / positive approach in nearly the world, really. And then you've come to Trinity to, I guess, add your skills into that. They already had a bit of a program, as you said, I'm trying to get the right words, as you say, program or initiatives, whatever you want to call them, across the school. And you've come in and done an audit on it, which sounds like a great approach, rather than coming in and just doing what you think should be done, but listening to teachers, students, seeing what's in place already, and then making the, I guess, moves depending on where the school's at. So having been in, I guess, two really strong schools when it comes to well-being, what are some of those benefits that you've seen when a school is really dedicated to it? Because from my experience, what I've seen in some schools is that they want to have like a whole school approach, but it's very inconsistent. And some teachers, if it's left up to the teachers, will do with no real structure. The teachers who, like us, who are really passionate about it, will do it really well. And the other ones who sitting on the fence aren't sure, and those ones who not interested at all. And this is in the same school. It's so inconsistent. So I guess, how do you create that consistency, but also the benefits of having that consistent approach and the benefits of what you've seen?
That is tough because you're right. Everyone's perception or perspective around what this could, should, or even in reality is, shapes what it then looks like. So I think one of the earliest things we had to do was accept and acknowledge, going back to what I said, that all of these skills are things that can be taught. You know, there was once upon a time, well, you just made everybody feel good. And if everyone felt good, then you were doing okay, because that's how we got through our day. That's how we got through the lessons. But the flip side now is to say that in our lives, there are going to be bad times. We know that trauma or tragedy can strike us at any time. So how do we teach people to be prepared to have this as a tool? So we always talk about a toolkit, knowing that not every tool is fit for every purpose.
Yep.
And sometimes there's no tool that's going to work. So that's where just acknowledgement and that's where being aware of your emotions is really important. So if I have awareness of how I'm feeling, and I have an understanding that it's actually not going to last, that bad times are going to happen, but there is a light and we will progress through. That for me is what the ultimate benefit is, that we see that we're teaching things for the unknown and the unpredictable, because it's easy to ignore how you're feeling when things are going right. No one usually stops and goes, oh, I'm feeling really great at this point in time, because it's just when we get into flow or we get into that rhythm of life that is, yeah, feeling good. But when something hits us that makes us jolt to go, okay, actually that doesn't feel comfortable, that something is feeling, I'm feeling some kind of disconnect or dysregulation at the moment, what can I do about it? So that's the benefits for me with the start have been showing that you teach kids for the unpredictable or the unknown, and you use that for yourself as well, you know? So our strong push at the moment, coming back to the educator well-being, is really reshaping our thinking around what's in our control and what's out of our control. So as educators, we know that we have to write reports, that we have to have parent interviews, and we have to do certain things. They're out of our control.
Yeah.
But what's in our control is how we choose to respond or react to them. So if I know that every week six of term, I'm either writing reports or I'm meeting with a parent, I can ho-hum, or I could be really negative about it, or I could just choose the fact that, you know, this is what I'm doing. This is part of the job. And we have to reframe it into, so when things are out of our control, what's in our control is the way we respond. And our push now again is the way we respond is based on understanding our why. If we know why we're doing what we're doing and our purpose of being a worker in a school, that helps shape and frame our responses to things. So recently we talked about, rather than saying, how am I going to plan a lesson, or how am I going to communicate results, or how am I going to communicate this with parents, flip the how to a why. So why am I setting this for my kids to do? Why do I want to assess it? And then why do I want to communicate with parents? So by flipping the word from how to why, it brings back to you your purpose of what you're doing and why you're doing it. Which hopefully then helps you say, okay, yeah, these are bad. Oh, these are going to be trying times when I'm trying to assess, mark, and report, but I understand the purpose behind why I'm doing it. So it's just a little shift, but hopefully enough that it comes back to being the benefit of deliberately teaching some of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting that it's a lot of mindset, like, whatever we're doing, it all comes down to the way we see things and reframing. I think reframing is one of the most powerful skills we can have as a person, and as teachers especially, but also teaching young people those skills of reframing and awareness. You mentioned awareness. Again, those reframing awareness is such important skills. And you're right, we can practice them. And I guess it just needs to be consistent practice. And I guess that's where the whole school approach and that consistent action over time can really benefit us as educators, but just as important as the kids as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, for us as anybody that works in a school, we have to model it. Yeah. We have to model what we want to see in our children. So I talk about one of my practices. We have a bridge that goes across a beautiful creek area here, and when I get to that bridge, it's 15 steps, but it's 15 steps where I usually don't talk to the person I'm walking with.
Yeah.
Because it's my time for 15 steps to recenter, refocus, take in into account the beauty of what's around me, to appreciate where I am, and just to have 15 steps of me time.
Yep.
So everyone knows now that that's one of my habits. It's something that was done deliberately. So that when I walk out of my office, greeted by kids, I then take in, you know, I get the energy and the joy of working at a school, but I also have the time to reflect to say, you know, how lucky am I that I work in a school?
Yeah. Have you ever been caught out when you come out to that the start of the 15 steps, halfway through mid conversation, just totally stopped?
Yeah, people know. The staff, I've said to the staff about. Yeah. So most time now, if I'm going to walk with someone, I will try not to walk across the bridge because it is a habit. We can walk around it.
That's
there
so
are
good.
Days. Yeah, well, for me, there are days where I will even stop on the bridge if I need more than my 15 steps.
Yep.
Because schools are busy places, and we don't often find that time to stop to look after ourselves. And we go back to the very early conversation that we've just had around being right with yourself. So if I need that time to stop, breathe, recenter, and just be prepared to move on to the next conversation I need to have, then that 20 seconds is well worth it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you nailed it spot on there with knowing those things that work for you is so important. Like, that's what I always talk to students about. Yes, we're going to have bad days, but yes, we're responsible for improving our mood, and finding out what works for you is really important, because what works for me might not work for you. But and sharing some ideas, but just getting the students to experiment with them. And some of them have some really good strategies already, which is terrific. And I know I always share mine as physical activity. So if I having a bad day and I finish the day with physical activity, I know that's going to improve my mood. But just also gratitude, as you said there, like just appreciating what's around us. Like, you're right, particularly the Trinity North campus is actually a beautiful campus. And just there's always things that we can be grateful for. We just look for them.
Absolutely. You know, we share the same belief in that gratitude has to be at the essence of who we are. Where, you know, if there is no gratitude for our being, and we see that everything revolves around us rather than, you know, our connection to it, I think that's almost, it's the first stumbling point for well-being. Because, yeah, at my job here is to be part of a service community. It has to be me working with or working alongside. It's not me working for or others working for me. It's finding those small things to be grateful and to be able to express your gratitude. Because the more you express your gratitude, the more you see the good in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, it's been a brilliant conversation. And one thing, like when I went out to Trinity North recently, you were carrying a big load of, I don't know what was in there, but then you said, I've got to man the coffee stand. So you've actually literally bought a coffee van that sits on campus. Now, I love that, because for me, as soon as I think about that, I love coffee, but just the connection, like people gathering around the van, whether that's parents, I'm not sure who has access to it exactly, but having a conversation, sharing a coffee, you're like, that's a great idea. Is that, tell us about that.
So yeah, look, one of the things I really wanted to push for this year was student voice and agency. And so last year, a couple of the groups spoke about, you know, small business and cafe type ownership. And by chance, we were having a rebuild and needed somewhere for our canteen to go. So our canteen ended up sharing our staff room for a period of time, but I also bought a food truck, as you do. I bought a food truck that they operated for a while out of. And then we decided that was going to become the student venture. And so some year nines in a maths class last year started some ideas around what it could be, and what, you know, the way things could work with it. And from that, the idea then evolved that we have our coffee van called Nourished at North. And everything the students wanted all biodegradable. So all everything we use is biodegradable because it had to be compostable. So even the stickers that go on our cups, biodegradable. We have a roster that our students man the van. There's obviously teachers supervising, but it's there for our community mornings and afternoons. So people buy it. Even conversations with some of the students around, just because people have different dietary requirements, they shouldn't be forced to pay more. So all of our milk products are the same price. A coffee is the same regardless of what milk you want. And so that was led by students. And you know, as recently as this week, they're talking about how they're going to evolve into the summer now by introducing the ice drinks and how we could link in with our food tech to do some banana bread or some muffins to do a coffee and cake deal. They've just released the loyalty card, so the more coffee you buy. So it's all coming from their ideas, and we know that they've got ownership. So those students who are manning this van are here very early. They're happy to come in. They set up, they help clean up, because they own it. They're part of how that's evolved. So it's slowly taking off. We know it takes about 3 months for people to change their habits, particularly when it comes to their local coffee shop in the morning. But it's right by our car park, and we're getting more and more parents stop in. So it's working really well.
Such a good idea. That's such a great conversation we've had today. So I know that you've created some character strength iBooks. Is there a link that we could share, put in the show notes to share? And we don't have, you can just send it to me. But is that, there are a couple of resources that we could share?
Yeah, so I think they're still available on Apple. So through iBooks, they were just things that worked really well through iPads or devices that could just connect with, like I said, some definitions. They were linked to stories. There were links to activities, but they're all basically done that electronically. So not paper pen type stuff, all through the iBook or iPad. Hopefully, I can share them with you and people can have access to them.
Absolutely, mate. That's brilliant. So I really appreciate your time, David. There's some great insights there into setting up a whole school approach. I really love the audit approach coming into a new school. And you don't even have to come into a new school, really, do you? It's just something that could be done like yearly or annually or biannually, whatever it might be.
Yeah. If we don't evaluate practice, we don't grow, because we just assume that what we're doing is working well. And if it was working well, we wouldn't have some of the issues that we're necessarily having, which tells us we need more. We need to change. We need to modify. So,
yeah, no, absolutely, mate. No, I really appreciate your time and some fantastic insights. And thanks for sharing with us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.